Let's spill the tea on what really matters. If you could ask any teenager what's on their mind, what do you think they would say?
Hey, I'm Yasmin.
Hey, I'm Tess.
I'm Mylène.
I'm Agathe.
I'm Adam. We're students from Lycée Blaise Pascal in Clermont-Ferrand, France.
Welcome to Let the Youth Talk, a podcast where we will talk about history, interesting facts, and what's in the news in some English-speaking countries. We'll also shed light on popular topics among teenagers. And last but not least, guests from Canada, the USA, and the UK will join us to share their views. Hollywood is the epicenter of global entertainment. Fame, influence, and creativity converge in the United States. At the 2025 Grammy Awards, Beyoncé won her first album of the year for Cowboy Carter, making history as the first black woman of the century to win this award. She also took home Best Country Album, marking a significant moment in her career. However, her win sparked some controversy, with some believing Billie Eilish should have won for Hit Me Hard and Soft. While some see it as a long overdue recognition for Beyoncé, others focus on the cultural impact of her album, which continues the debates we've seen in the past Grammy controversies. Shakira also had a major win at the 2025 Grammys, taking home the Best Latin Pop Album Award for her 12th album, Las Mujeres Ya No Lloran. She dedicated the award to immigrants in the US, working women, and her children, Sasha and Milan. This win marks Shakira's fourth Grammy. Doechii made history by winning Best Rap Song for Catfish. This is her first ever Grammy, and she became the third woman ever to win this award. In her speech, she passionately talked about the importance of her win as a black woman in rap, sharing how her skin color and personal experiences shaped her music. Her powerful words resonated with many, emphasizing the importance of representation and paved the way for future generations of women of color in the rap industry.
SZA won Best R&B Song for Saturn, marking her second consecutive win in this category, following her win for Snooze in 2024. Kendrick Lamar also made waves, winning Record of the Year and Song of the Year for Not Like Us. Plus, at the Super Bowl 59 in February 2025, Kendrick made history as the first solo rapper to headline the halftime show, performing his iconic hits like Humble, Jenny, and All the Stars alongside SZA. After an electrifying halftime performance filled with bold messages, the Super Bowl itself became more than just a game. It became a stage for powerful storytelling. During the Super Bowl 59 halftime show, Kendrick Lamar delivered a powerful political message saying, "The revolution is about to be televised, and you picked the right time but the wrong person," which were interpreted as sold critics of Donald Trump, who was in attendance. SZA joined him to perform Luther and All the Stars, adding an emotional touch to the show. Their chemistry and bold messages left a lasting impact.
David Lynch, the visionary filmmaker behind Twin Peaks, Blue Velvet, and The Mulholland Drive, passed away on January 16, 2025, at the age of 78. In the month leading up to his death, his health had declined, and he had become homebound due to the health risks. Despite these challenges, Lynch's influence on the cinema remains profound, with his unique storytelling and surreal imagery leaving an indelible mark on the industry. So, Rebecca, do you follow the Oscars or the Grammys closely?
I do. I used to follow them much more because I'm from California. And my friends, when I was younger, we would have Oscar parties. We'd have like little voting things, and we would put our guests for the best who would win. So I used to follow them really, really closely when I was a bit younger, when I lived in the States. The Grammys, a little bit less. I follow them when there's controversial things, so I usually read them the next day. But the Oscars, definitely.
Okay.
Now it's time for rapid fire questions. So, Hollywood or Broadway?
Hollywood, obviously.
Okay. Concerning the Super Bowl, you prefer the halftime show or the football game?
I prefer the ads.
Interesting choice.
Now the classic moment of the Oscars you'll never forget.
So for me, there are two. I guess they're not classic moments, but memorable. 2019, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, they sang Shallow, which is a really moving song. And in 2008, when Heath Ledger died before Batman came out, the posthumous dedication to him was very touching.
Okay. Pop or hip-hop?
Pop.
Best American city for entertainment, LA or New York City?
New York City, even though my fellow Californians will not be happy.
Biggest guilty pleasure movie?
So anything with Jason Momoa, my personal love, and some romantic comedies, but specifically Reese Witherspoon, who is America's sweetheart, and I love her.
Okay. From the dazzling world of Hollywood, the Oscars, and the Grammys, to the vast unknown of space exploration, both are driven by a relentless pursuit of greatness.
From the space race to modern deep space exploration, NASA has driven some of the most ambitious missions in history, pushing the boundaries of human knowledge. NASA was founded in 1958 during the Cold War. The US and the Soviet Union were in a battle for dominance not just on Earth but in space. The Soviets took the lead at first, launching the first satellite, Sputnik, in 1957. But the US quickly responded, creating NASA and dedicating itself to winning the space race. The biggest moment came in 1969 when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first humans to walk on the moon. Armstrong's famous words, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind," became part of history. This event wasn't just about science, it was about proving that America could achieve the impossible. Since then, NASA has continued to push boundaries. The Space Shuttle program allowed the reusable spacecraft, and the International Space Station became a symbol of global cooperation. Today, NASA is focusing on new frontiers. NASA continues to push the boundaries of space exploration in several key ways. For instance, the Artemis program aims to return astronauts to the moon by 2026, paving the way for future missions to Mars. In addition, the James Webb Space Telescope, the most powerful space telescope ever built, is enabling scientists to see further into the universe than ever before. Moreover, NASA is expanding access to space through collaborations with private companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, making commercial space travel a reality for civilians. Now, my question for you is, growing up in America, did you feel like NASA was still a big deal?
Yes, well, I'm a bit biased because my dad worked for NASA, so we had a lot of NASA stuff at home. He would bring home pictures of the moon and Saturn and things like that. So for my family especially, NASA was a very big deal, but I think that in general, it was still quite big. I'm older than you guys though. I was born in 1980, so it wasn't long after the space race.
Do people still see it as a symbol of national pride, or is space exploration not as exciting as it used to be?
I think that people do when they, whenever they do a launch at the at Cape Canaveral, for example, people come out from all over to watch the launches. But I was worried I was a bit biased, so I did a bit of research, and a recent Pew Research study showed that 65% of Americans are still very interested in space exploration. Perhaps that's because of Elon Musk and, as you said, SpaceX and Blue Origin. They're bringing it back to the forefront of people's minds. But I think that in America is a big symbol of national pride.
Okay, thank you so much. Why space exploration pushes the frontiers of discovery, the inauguration of Trump and Elon Musk's influence are impacting both politics and technology.
We obviously couldn't make a podcast about the USA without talking about the new election of President Trump. On January 28, 2025, Donald Trump officially became the 47th President of the United States of America and J.D. Vance his Vice President. The inauguration ceremony took place inside because of the freezing temperatures. During his inaugural address to the nation, Donald Trump declared that from this day on, the United States of America will be a free, sovereign, and independent nation. His first 100 days has sparked controversy because of the numerous executive orders he signed and the people he chose to join his administration. From Elon Musk making a gesture clearly resembling Nazi salutes, to the dismantlement of the Department of Education, the deportation of immigrants, huge tariffs imposed on Canada, Mexico, China, and Europe, gender rights being scuttled, and the shockingly aggressive meeting with the president of Ukraine, we may wonder how Americans view these sudden changes. So, Rebecca, how did you react to the multiple executive orders signed by President Trump? Is there one in particular that you would like to talk about?
I mean, there's so many. I really tried to think about what would be the most interesting to talk about. For me, I think that, like everybody, it comes down to the things that are important to us. So the things that really, for me, first of all, I was really disappointed about pulling out of the Paris Agreement again. Nobody's going to trust us with climate change in the future because it just goes back and forth every time we change presidents. But for me, one of the most shocking things and the most upsetting is probably getting rid of the Department of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. I'm not a minority by any sense of the word, but I think that we made a lot of progress under Obama, and in the last 20 years, in all countries, I would say, in how we view gender rights and things like that, as well as racism with the Black Rights, Black Lives Matter movement. So I find it really upsetting that we're going back in time, like back almost 100 years. So that for me is really difficult. The other thing which I find just, I don't know, absurd, is this renaming of the Gulf of Mexico. What is the point? It's unbelievable. And then also at the same time, he also changed Mount Denali. So I don't know if you guys read about this, but Denali is a mountain in Alaska that was named, changed back to its original Native American name. And now it's changed back to Mount McKinley, which is named after a US president. So it was changed in 2015 by Obama. We all just got used to calling it Denali, by the way. I called it Mount McKinley up until probably 5 years ago because I grew up with Mount McKinley. But in the same breath, he also gives recognition to this new tribe of Native Americans in North Carolina. So I find it really, he's very mixed messages on a lot of things. But I don't know, there's so many disturbing things. It's very hard to choose just one to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
As a teacher, how did you react to the dismantlement of the Department of Education and the budget cuts in higher education?
So I had to, so as anybody probably had to do, all Americans, is do research about what exactly the Department of Education does, because in my mind it was getting rid of public schools. But based on the research that I did, in fact, it's state and local governments that pay for public schools. This is actually about giving money to people to go to college, so university. And unfortunately, again, this is, it's just always about minorities and discrimination. But the people who are going to be the most affected by this is going to be low-income students, minorities, disabled students. I myself needed money from the Department of Education to go to school. I come from a family of nine. My parents could no way pay for nine children to go to college. So in the United States, where even public school, public colleges are quite expensive, I think that it's going to be a real problem. But I guess the point is that higher education is a choice. We don't all have to go, but it's a step back, I suppose, because people who have money can go to college no matter what, even if they're not that bright, you know. People who are very bright might not get that opportunity. So I don't know. It's really upsetting, I'd say.
Okay. Do you think that Elon Musk should leave the government? And if so, why?
So I don't think he should have ever been put in the government. I don't understand what his qualifications are for making him part of the government. But I mean, at least it wasn't Kid Rock. It could have been worse, is what I'm saying.
So how are your friends and family in the U.S. dealing with Trump's regular announcements?
It's really traumatizing. It's traumatizing. I have friends, one of my best friends that I've known my whole life, she's like, how do I move to France? What am I gonna? So like, people seriously considering leaving the United States, which is unfortunate because the people who are leaving are the people who are the most open-minded. They're people who are against it. So in fact, it's only going to make the problem worse, which is the biggest disappointment of it. For others, they just keep on keeping on. I don't know. It's really, really difficult. I know the last time President Trump was elected, I just would death scroll every night looking at all of the horrible things that were happening, and it put me into a tailspin. Like, I just couldn't, it was awful. And so I really tried to actually avoid reading the news, which I'm like an ostrich. I just put my head in the sand and pretend the world is going on around me and everything's happy. You have to ignore it at a certain point, or you're just going to go insane. Like, I mean, there's obviously people like the transgender people right now that are being discriminated against that can't ignore it. They need people to be out there for them. But I don't know. It's really, really difficult. Yeah.
What about inflation and the price of eggs that skyrocketed lately?
So I thought this was really interesting because Donald Trump used this as a big way to get elected, talking about how he was going to stop inflation. And yet he's imposing tariffs of like 25% on Canada and Mexico, which with the trade agreements that we've had with them in the past, it was to increase trade between these two countries, and adding tariffs is only going to make it even more expensive. And one of the things I was looking at, because it used to be NAFTA, it was at NAFTA, and Trump, so NAFTA is the North American Free Trade Agreement, just it was in place for many, many years. And in 2020, Trump got rid of it and replaced it with a new agreement with the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And one of the things in it was to make dairy products more available from Canada. And now the fact that he's adding these tariffs is, it's going to add to this problem with the eggs. So like, he's just unbelievable. I mean, he's so unbelievable. I can't. It's too much.
Now to another topic. Following the elections, we may wonder if freedom of speech is still respected in the USA.
So we chose to talk about the censorship established on TikTok or on books in the US because it's a very important subject for us as teenagers. It limits the freedom of local population, and that is really alarming. And of course, because of the huge international impact of the United States, this stuff might affect not only the American population, but also our country in extension, we guess. So recently, TikTok was banned in the US, but it didn't happen like it was supposed to. And many people still think that thanks to Trump, TikTok is now unbanned. But it is really the case, and how did the events unfold? Initially, the first politician who proposed to ban TikTok was Trump in 2020. He wanted the application to be sold by Microsoft, and it fell through. However, in 2024, former President Joe Biden, in order to add the sharing of Americans' data to China, signed the ban or sell bill into the law and gave TikTok a 90-day reprieve from the ban. A lot of conversation between the Supreme Court and ByteDance, TikTok's creator, ensued. Nonetheless, they were useless, and the 19th of January, TikTok was shut down in the USA. But then President Trump jumped at the chance and said that he was working with ByteDance to re-enable the use of the application. And only 12 hours after, the ban was lifted, but at what price? For more than 2 weeks, every time a person launched the application, the new message of unbanning was displayed. It said, "Thanks for your patience and support." As a result of President Trump's efforts, TikTok is back in the US. Moreover, the new post-Trump app was full of propaganda and censorship everywhere. You can no longer search certain words or use certain hashtags such as F Elon or F Facebook, while you can use F Biden.
However, it is not the only censorship applied in the US because over time, more and more books fly off library shelves. Actually, books are not officially banned yet in the whole country, but the only common thread between them is the criticism of government oppression, like in 1984, The Handmaid's Tale, Fahrenheit 451, Hunger Games, The Diary of a Young Girl, etc. The worrying thing is that a list of hundreds of books to ban were published by Project 2025, a 900-page wish list that would expand presidential power and impose a far-right social vision, which is by many points linked to Agenda 47, the campaign manifesto of President Donald Trump.
On top of that, the new term of President Trump raised about the removal of the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights concerning the right to bear arms, which creates a lot of danger for the American population, including the teenagers who have to face school shootings. Rebecca, as an American citizen, how do you feel about all the censorship and propaganda that keeps growing in your country?
So, for the propaganda, I think it's crazy town. It's unbelievable how much spreads, but this is what happens when we have social media and everybody is looking at the same news. I used to be a newspaper reporter, and when you read an actual newspaper, you read articles that might not interest you, where now everything is targeted at you to only be in your interest. So I think this is a big part of the problem. But as for censorship, Honestly, for the banned books, it should be known that they're just banning them from schools, they ban them for certain age groups and things like that, maybe because they have swear words or they have sexual imagery or things like that. So people can still buy those books in the United States. That needs to be clear. But it is worrying because there are many books that I had to read as a student that now are banned in schools. And I think that there are books that can open people's minds. We had to read a lot of books about slavery and the way mm-hmm. that people were treated. And I think that when we can see racism is increasing in many areas of the United States, and partially, I would say, because they're not reading these types of books. So I don't know. That's what I would say.
While censorship controls information, school shootings highlight a deeper shocked to see how many school shootings happen every year in the USA. In the first year of the pandemic, when schools were closed, there was a major decline in gun violence incidents on school grounds. Since then, recent years saw a stark increase in school shootings, with 2021, 2022, 2023 and 2024 all setting records since at least 2008. There were at least 83 incidents in 2024, but 2022 was one of the deadliest years, with 47 fatalities, according to CNN's analysis. That year saw the shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 students and two educators were killed and more than a dozen others were injured. These numbers show how important it is to take action to stop gun violence in school and keep students and staff safe. These attacks have tragic consequences. Lives are lost and survivors, whether students, teachers or families, suffer lasting trauma. School shootings remain a controversial and painful subject, highlighting deep division within American society. Despite numerous discussions, finding at least solution to this crisis remains a major challenge. So, Rebecca, do you think American schools are safe enough?
Yes, I do. I'm older than you guys, but I have a lot of family that still lives in the States and their kids go to school. There are some people who are worried about school shootings and things like that, but I think that the media blows it out of proportion. I mean, it is scary if it happens in your community, but I don't think that it's happening as much as we think it is. I never witnessed any kind of violence at school when I was younger. My brothers and sisters haven't told me about any incidents with their kids. But again, if it did happen to them, then I would be shocked and I would be, you know, this is happening everywhere. So I think it's hard to judge. But if we look at the number of schools that exist in the United States and the number of school shootings that are happening, I think that it's a very, very small percentage.
Okay. So do you think teachers should be armed?
Personally, no, I don't think so. I don't think that, like, so in the U.S. they have this saying, and it's horrible because it's a Texas thing. Sorry, Texas and California has a rivalry. You know, they say this thing like the only thing to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. I don't honestly think that that's accurate. I think that it's just more likely to cause even more injuries and even more people to die. I don't know. I think there's always a simple solution that's offered by people, but I don't think it's necessarily the right solution. Having heightened security, arming teachers, even profiling students is not necessarily the best reaction. It's just a knee-jerk reaction. People want to have something quick and fast that they can say, okay, here, let's rubber stamp it. We did our job. And I don't think that that's exactly what we need to do. I think that what's happening in schools where teachers are taking more interest in their students, people are speaking out against bullying and things like that, I think that is what's really going to change this violence in schools, personally.
I agree.
Are students trained to react in case of a school shooting?
Yes. So I don't know if you guys have these kind of things. So in California, we have to do training for earthquakes as well. So we have to, like, when we're little kids, we have to get under our desks and we have to. So whenever we hear this alarm, we have to get under our desks if there's going to be an earthquake, because then nothing can fall on top of us. And in schools now, they do training for school shootings as well, which freaks everybody out. They have silent alarms. So in fact, it's just in the classroom, a light that blinks so that they know, so that it doesn't make the shooter aware that people know that there's a shooter. And they do have, they've added closets in some classrooms that lock with steel doors so they can go inside, for example. So there are things that they do, but I think that it's kind of traumatizing for both the students and the teachers to do these kind of drills. But again, it's for safety. When my parents were younger, they had to do it for nuclear bombs because they thought Russia was going to bomb us. So there's always these safety things that we have to teach kids and teach them how to be safe. So unfortunately, yes, they do have drills for that.
Okay, we have the same thing for earthquake.
Oh, no, you do?
It's not about earthquake. Like, we have to get under the table to protect ourselves from, like, a potential danger, but more for a person, not an earthquake.
Yeah. Though at the university the other day, there was the bombing warning, like, from World War II. It was this, and I was like, what is that noise? And my students were like, oh, it's a test for the World War II bombing warning signal. And I was like, what? We're still doing that? So, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We have a lot of these types of things that we have to prepare for just in case. So, but it is quite unfortunate, I would say.
Do you think there is a way to identify a potential shooter?
I mean, personally, I thought there was. I did some research. The FBI did some case studies about this. And so they have four ways that those four ways work together. So it's the personality of the student, the student's family dynamic, so how their family treats them, how they are at school, so their school and how they interact with people at school, and then how they are in society in general. And basically, I think they look at if they fill in more than one of these boxes, that or more, maybe three out of four or something, then maybe they need to be paid attention to. But at schools in the US and here as well, we have counselors that can help students that are in trouble. The problem is getting the parents involved. So family dynamics, I think, is a really important part. Although every time on the news, the parents are like, oh, we had no idea. And it's like, well, maybe you needed to be a little bit more involved in your kid's life. So yeah, parents who are kind of checked out, I don't know that they'll notice enough to send their kid to the school counselor, but hopefully, I mean, that would be the first step, is trying to get them help before it goes too far. So,
yeah. School shootings expose deep societal issues, while Scientology offers a controversial approach to personal and spiritual challenges, both sparking debate on how to address human struggles.
Modern religions have generated as much debate and controversy as Scientology, both for its beliefs and its practices. I choose to talk about Scientology because it is one of the most controversial modern religions. Its connection to Hollywood and celebrity culture makes it even more fascinating to explore. Scientology was created in the 1950s by Hubbard, a science fiction writer. He developed a belief system based on the idea that humans are actually mortal spiritual beings called thetans, who have lived many past lives. But what makes Scientology controversial is not just its beliefs, it's the way the organization operates. The Church of Scientology is accused of controlling its members, as many former Scientologists say they were pressured to stay in the church and cut ties with family members who left. Furthermore, harassing critics, since journalists and ex-members who speak out against Scientology often claim they are followed, threatened or sued by the church. And finally, demanding extreme financial contributions given by Scientology. Curses can cost thousands of dollars, and members are expected to continue paying for higher levels of enlightenment. Despite these controversies, Scientology has remained influential, especially in Hollywood. Celebrities like Tom Cruise, John Travolta, and Elizabeth Moss are devoted followers. For many people, this is what makes Scientology so fascinating. It's both a religious movement and a part of pop culture. As an American, how do most people view Scientology? Do they take it seriously, or is it more of a strange Hollywood thing?
Honestly, well, again, I'm from California, and so it is a strange Hollywood thing. But I'm not from Southern California. Most of us just think they're a bunch of weirdos, honestly. especially after Tom Cruise was on Ellen, like, ranting and raving like a crazy person. I think that he is probably the worst thing that ever happened to Scientology. But no, they're just crazy people. There used to be a guy outside of my work that did Scientology stuff. He had, like, all these books by L. Ron Hubbard, and he had this little, like, electromagnet or magneted thingamabob, and he would, like, ask you, he's like, do you want to get your electromagneticism read? And you're like, get away from me, weirdo. And I didn't know who he was. I was like, this is the weirdest dude ever. And then I found one of my coworkers, like, oh, well, it's Scientology. And I was like, what? So, yeah, I mean, they're just weirdos. I mean, but there's a lot of crazy religious people in America in general, not just Scientologists. There's, like, craziness. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they can think of them as being any crazier than other religious fanatics, but they are a little bit weirdos. So.
Yeah. That's it. So that is the end of our second podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned a few things about the USA.
Good luck for the exams!